Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The idea of reparations for the descendants of slaves is not a new idea in America, and it's been floated many times over the past several years. But what is a more unusual idea is one introduced last week by D.C.'s Ward 5 Councilman Kenyon McDuffie. It's a bill that seeks reparations for the D.C. descendants of chattel slavery. We have a lot of questions about the bill and what it could possibly mean as it works its way through the D.C. Council. Joining me tonight to talk about it is Ward 5 D.C. Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie. Also joining the conversation is Nakichi Taifa, member of the National African American Reparations Commission. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question about this. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can also tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Councilman McDuffie and Nakichi, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Glad to be here. Thanks
for having me, Harold.
Absolutely. Council member, why did you introduce this bill? What was the genesis of it for you?
The genesis was, not simply this moment and this movement that's going on right now, but obviously it played a part. I mean, right now we're experiencing a pandemic that is disproportionately harming the physical and economic health of black people more than anyone else. Because the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and locally Deion Kay, and too many others, there have been calls to do so much to address the disparities, stark and persistent disparities that exist in the District of Columbia. And, frankly, reparations is something that is more than long overdue in the District of Columbia. If you acknowledge, as I know, Nakichi understands well, perhaps some of your listeners don't know, that reparations, this notion isn't necessarily new, and it's not new to the District of Columbia. The unfortunate part about it is the only people who have ever received restitution by the government as a result of slavery in the District of Columbia were the slave owners after the April 1862 D.C. Compensated Emancipation Act. And so I think it is, more than overdue for us to consider addressing these stark disparities in a way that is most meaningful, and that is to acknowledge that slaves helped to build this city, helped to build this country, but they did so without compensation, and their descendants definitely deserve this to be part of the public debate right now.
You introduced the bill last week before the D.C. Council, and the process includes a task force. What does that task force do? Who would be on it? Give me the rundown about that, please.
Absolutely, yeah. So the bill, the Reparations Task Force Establishment Act of 2020, would establish the task force to research and develop proposals for reparations in the District of Columbia. That would assemble scholars who have this sort of expertise, similar to folks like Nakichi, to draft and research and analyze the economic benefits of slavery that accrue to owners, that accrue to businesses in the United States and the District of Columbia, including insurance companies and their subsidiaries that receive, I think, tremendous benefits from the institution of chattel slavery that existed in the District of Columbia. They would make recommendations to the council regarding their findings. There are a couple of questions that I get a lot when I talk about reparations, and people always say, well, how that's supposed to happen and what would it look like? And frankly, I think that's a great question, but the questions that are more appropriate for the task force, which is why the bill would require the task force to recommend the form of compensation that would be awarded, the methods through which it should be awarded, and also they would recommend who should be eligible for compensation of this type. And so those are some of the high notes of what the bill would do. And so I'm really really excited about the feedback that we've been getting about the bill from residents and people across the country, for that matter.
Nikeechi, your thoughts about this process. Obviously, you're on the National African American Reparations Commission, and I want to drill down a little bit more about that in just a second. But at first blush, your thoughts about this legislation that the council member has introduced?
Well, thank you so very much, Howard. I am...
Harold, but go ahead.
I said Howard.
No, you said Howard, but that's all right. I get it all the time.
Now you get me off right on this. But I'm thrilled and excited, and I applaud our council member for introducing this legislation. His introduction of this bill follows on the heels of similar bills that have been introduced in jurisdictions across the country, whether it's Evanston, Illinois, whether it's Chicago, Chicago, Illinois, Asheville, North Carolina, Rhode Island, the state of California has just called for a commission. And also, this is not a well-known fact known today in 2020, but in 1980, I helped to lead the effort to have the District of Columbia endorse H.R. 40, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act, through the Committee on the Judiciary under the leadership of Wilhelmina Rolock. And at that time, I was a founding member of the seminal grassroots reparations organization, which still exists today in COBRA, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. And I've been talking about this issue, you know, ever since then. And so, you know, the three of us, we are all native Washingtonians, okay? But many of us did not come up, at least me, in the 70s, did not come up in the schools learning that it was the slave holders that actually got reparations with the, I didn't even grow up knowing about the D.C. Compensated Emancipation Act, you know, back in the day. But, you know, when that information came to light, it's really daunting, okay? The audacity, you know, the irony of the whole situation. So I'm glad that now we're talking about an issue whose time has come. And I'm really looking forward to this commission and the study that it will be doing, the investigation, and the education of the residents of the District of Columbia.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the reparations bill introduced last week by Ward 5 Council Member Kenyon McDuffie on the D.C. Council, proposing reparations for descendants of chattel slavery in the District of Columbia. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I'd like to know what you think about this. Michelle, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Michelle. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I'll try to be as brief and informative as possible. So there were there was the approach of reparations throughout the years and trying to figure out or trying to accomplish the task of who would pay for these reparations, who would pay for the disparities that were suffered by African Americans. So during the slave trade, the insurance companies that would insure the slave owners if, in fact, their slaves got away or ran away and they weren't able to find them, then they would actually, there was actually an insurance company that would insure the slave masters and pay them if, in fact, they could not recoup the property, which, of course, was the slave at the time. That company, that insurance company, is one of three of the most lucrative organizations in the world, not in America, not in the States, but it is actually the Lords of London. So there is a movement to who do we go to that has benefited the most from the slave trade itself, and that is the insurers or the Lords of London.
And Michelle, Michelle, like you said, I need you to be short, but with Lloyd's of London, you are correct that was one of the largest insurance companies in the world that did insure the loss of of slaves to slave traders. And council member, in a conversation that you and I had last week when this story first came out, you mentioned that insurance companies would be part of the list under consideration.
Yeah, no doubt. And Michelle points out a very important fact. In fact, the bill speaks to insurance companies. We have in the District of Columbia a Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking, and the bill that I introduced will require the insurance commissioner who runs the agency to request and obtain information from insurers who are licensed to do business in the District of Columbia with respect to any records of slaveholder insurance policies issued by the company or any one of their predecessor corporations during the slavery era. However, it would also require insurers to research and report to the commissioner on insurance any policies that provided coverage for, you know, injury to slaves or any death of enslaved people and the like. And so, no, I mean, what Michelle points out is very important, and that is considered in the bill that I introduced.
And Nakichi, talk to me briefly about the National African American Reparations Commission for those who are not familiar with it.
Yes, thank you. The commission is made up of a number of different professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, lawyers, academics, and the like, who have come together to look at these issues dealing with reparations. And one of the key things that we are doing, we just did it in Evanston, Illinois, is looking at various criteria for various reparations initiatives that are out there. We work very closely with the assembly member in Evanston, Alderman Robin Boo Simmons, in working through in Evanston, they use tax monies, tax dollars from the legal cannabis industry there to fund a reparation proposals. That's what they are using. That is their method. But NARC, the National African American Reparations Commission, has a number of different criteria that we juxtaposed against what they were doing. One of those criteria, and this will be very important for you, council member, as you're going through the process here in D.C., from our perspective, the remedy must be defined or agreed to by those who suffered the injury or harm. It cannot be the entity that that promulgated the harm to be the one to define the remedy. There must be an apology in accordance with international norms for reparations. There should be some type of independent structure to receive whatever the resources for the restitution is. And very, very important, regular, standard, or ordinary public policy is not reparations. So it's not just putting the name reparations on things that were going to be done anyway or have been done anyway. Some of the great pieces of legislation, I know, council member, that I've been following that have been very dear and near and dear to my heart that you promulgated, such as the NEAR Act and Vanderbox and juvenile things and all like that. That's public policy that should be happening anyway. But for a reparations proposal, it should be specifically tied to whatever that harm is or was. And also the important thing is that it's not just harm from the enslavement era, but from the enslavement era and the vestiges of that era down through to today.
Councilmember,
so one of the things that NARC, National African American Reparations Commission does, along with NCOBA, the National Coalition of Black for Reparations in America, and we are all in support of the federal bill, H.R. 40, from the federal government, as well as the various state and local initiatives as well.
That's a whole lot to unpack, and I am going to drill down a little bit more on much of what you just shared, Nakichi, but I did want to throw this out to the council member, too. In your mind, what might reparations look like? I mean, this isn't 40 acres and a mule. This is it 4 acres and a Lexus? Is it free education? Is it cash? And we are talking about a D.C. bill that for people who live in the District of Columbia, short of getting a response from insurance companies and entities like that, would this be taxpayer money to fund this process? So if I've been living in D.C. or I'm from D.C. like I am, or like my mother is, you know, how does that work? Do black taxpayers have to pay the taxes to get reparations in D.C.? You understand how complex this is?
Oh, I certainly understand how complex it is, which is why the task force would be comprised of experts who have done a lot more research and have written a lot more on these topics than I have. You know, people like Nikechi, let me say, she's being so modest. She talked about the Neighborhood Engagement Achieved Results Act that I introduced. She talked about the bill that I passed on comprehensive juvenile justice reform, Bannerbach, a lot of those things, and Nikechi was instrumental and provided advice and counsel on. So I wanted to just really give her her props. But let me say this. So I'm not going to preempt the work of the task force by suggesting what I think personally about this. I think this issue is way too important to have an elected official like myself, despite the fact that I've spent a lot of time reading and researching this. I think when it comes from an elected official, it's a lot different from coming from a task force of experts with qualifications to opine on these types of things and who have done the research and made recommendations perhaps to other jurisdictions. Here's the reality, Harold. Slavery, de jure, de facto segregation, and other government-sanctioned actions like redlining, it served to deny wealth-building opportunities to black Americans and District of Columbia residents. And today, we still live with the vestiges of slavery, which is what Nikechi just alluded to. Black descendants of slaves have struggled for more than 400 years to give meaning to phrases like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, liberty and justice for all. And so this notion of the American dream, which is, so rooted in the United States that you hear so often, it's based on this idea that with hard work, everyone born here has an equal opportunity to succeed. And that simply is not the case, particularly if you are a black person. We do not live in a post-racial society, and racial equality has not been achieved. And so, any claim that the stark racial disparities that exist in the District of Columbia, where we have one of the largest wealth disparities of any city in the United States. And in terms of housing, our city is one of the most racially segregated.
Council member, I've got to stop you. I'm going to let you finish your point. I want to let our listeners know that this isn't the last time that we are going to hear from Nikechi Taifa. She's going to be on HUR at Home at 8:15 tonight talking about her new book, Black Power, Black Lawyer, My Audacious Quest for Justice. She's got a lot to say, and so do we. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, 202-319-7810. John Mons with the original Quiet Storm is next. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. We are talking about reparations for D.C. descendants of slaves. My guests are Ward 5 D.C. Council member Kenyon McDuffie and Nikechi Taifa, member of the National African American Reparations Commission. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Council member, go ahead and finish your point, please.
No, just making the point that the stark racial disparities that exist in the District of Columbia in terms of wealth disparities between blacks and whites, the racially segregated housing that exists here, these types of things didn't occur by happenstance. And, any claim that these stark racial disparities can be eliminated by free market forces, or, this common refrain that black people simply can change their behaviors and pull themselves up by their bootstraps, rather than government-sanctioned efforts to atone for the lingering effects of structural racism, is simply a flawed argument. And we need to really go about this in a way that is smart and thoughtful and address it comprehensively through task forces such as the one that I introduced.
But Nikechi, let me ask you this, because of all of the things that the council member just mentioned when you're talking about everything from, redlining to Jim Crow to racism, at least to me, that's not reparations. That's unfair. And so dealing with those things is the floor. And then, if we could get through you know, the legacy of the floor, then let's talk about reparations. Let's talk about, you know, reparations, you know, it's not the icing on the cake. That's just the cake. Because we were denied the cake for, you know, 400 years. So let's now deal with, we talk about, you know, the reparations received by Japanese Americans who were put in internment camps during World War II. We talk about reparations to, the families of Jews who were in the death camps in Germany. You know, many of those folks still, and their families, still getting checks.
Yep.
Okay? I've had a chance to speak to them about that. And so I think that let's talk about the cake, not the icing, but the cake. And what, for you, what does that look like?
Let me just say something about this cake, if I can, for a moment. I must say that no amount of money can ever repair the intergenerational or the contemporary damages inflicted on Black folks as a result of the enslavement or racially exclusionary policies. No amount of money. So what we're talking about is a negotiation. What we will be talking about is a settlement. When you asked a question earlier about tax dollars and will we be paying, most folks don't realize. But when you just now spoke about the Japanese American Redress Bill, the Civil Liberties Act of 1988, which gave $20,000 to each Japanese American detention camp survivor, a trust fund to be used to educate Americans about the sufferings of the Japanese Americans, a formal apology from the U.S. government, and a pardon for all those who resisted detention camp internment, guess who paid for that?
We taxpayers,
did. Taxpayers paid for that. So, I mean, I'm just saying, it's not, I mean, I'm just so.
Including Black taxpayers.
What Illinois is doing actually is actually innovative, using tax revenue as opposed to taxes coming from our individual taxes, tax revenue from the sale of recreational marijuana, which is consistent, in my humble opinion, with reparatory justice, being that Black communities is our people who bore the brunt of the war on drugs through deliberate targeting, arrest, incarceration, the policing, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to, like the council member McCarthy said, it is this commission that will look at all of these things and determine there's no one answer to any of this. And there's no right answer and there's no wrong answer, okay? The thing is, we need to get together the experts so that we can come up with answers and determine how this is going to be done, because it is an issue whose time has come.
So here's my concern also, because you mentioned, a task force back in 1980. Yes. And the, was it H.R. 40?
Yeah, it wasn't a task force. It was a resolution.
Okay.
During that time, there were many jurisdictions that were passing resolutions to support the federal bill, and that's what the D.C. City Council did in 1980.
Okay, so let me break down some of the semantics. Supporting... you were talking about what was happening in Illinois about, proceeds from, recreational marijuana to support the study and the task force and H.R. 40, which after all of the emotional testimony that we heard last year on Capitol Hill. But it's a task force. It's
No. The Evanston, Illinois is actually to fund reparation proposals.
Okay, where are we with that? Because it's a proposal. So what's happening with that? I guess this is my point.
Okay.
This is my point. It's like let me just be honest. Talk is cheap.
But no, they have identified. They've gone further. It's not just a study. It's not just a commission to study. It's not like the California Governor Newsom. You know, this is actually $10 million over 10 years, which is really just a drop in the bucket. But they're looking at housing, exclusionary housing. They looked at the specific ways in which the vestiges of enslavement impacted Evanston, Illinois. And one of the main areas that they are looking at is housing, and that's where they have decided to begin to fund, whether it's through housing loans to black people, whether it's helping to pay off their mortgage or whatever. They have a schemata, and there's a community base of stakeholders that are working out the various specifics.
So I ask again, so where are we with that now? Because this is, you know, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but, you know, we're talking about reparations for blood spilled that helped build this country. I don't want to hear about loans. Give me what my family is due. That's my point.
I'm with you there.
I appreciate the study. I appreciate the resolution. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the task force, Councilmember McDuffie. But, you know, as a D.C. native whose parents taught me black history that I learned in school, that I learned in an HBCU, I don't need anybody to study anything anymore. Give me something.
And that's, I guess, why the council member's bill is, I think, is to study and develop. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Look, Harold, I am one who understands full well that people are sick and tired
of being sick and tired.
sick and tired with studies that get produced, that sit on the shelf and collect dust, right? And so
right.
I didn't run for public office in order to really engage in those types of symbolic efforts. I mean, apologies for slavery isn't enough.
Right.
Removing Confederate statues is not enough.
That's
renaming
the floor.
renaming buildings for people who, you know, are involved in slavery is simply not enough. We need to make sure that we address the economic undercurrent that has existed for hundreds of years in this country, that are the vestiges of chattel slavery, right? The fact that people who look like us helped to build this city, the nation's capital, brick by brick, and we're not compensated for it, is something that is very important to this conversation. During the period of slavery and additional plunder, you can see slaves march right in front of the Capitol, chained by their feet and necks, right? And so until the federal government steps up, and I'm not going to hold my breath for them to step up, right, particularly right now, but until they step up, we need local governments to step up and atone for the dark history that is slavery in the United States and in the nation's capital.
Council member, let us say that the task force comes up with great recommendations, 400 pages of recommendations, symbolically speaking, and it passes the council and everybody's on board. How do you get something like that through the process of Congress, because D.C. is not the 51st state, and it.
Well, we're working on that.
Yes,
indeed we are.
Yes, that look, as they say, that's a whole nother conversation. But that notwithstanding, until such a thing happens, how do you get your bill, if it is passed by the D.C. Council, signed by the mayor, how do you get that moved on Capitol Hill?
Well, you know, I think we do it the same way that we did it successfully for issues like medical marijuana, for issues around homegrown, home use of marijuana here in District of Columbia. Things that, you know, a lot of folks on Capitol Hill, whether they're Republican or Democrat, might not agree with, have been passed locally by our council here in the nation's capital and have gone into effect because it's been the will of the people who live here, right? And so that's a very important point that you're raising. But there's a clear history of us, you know, exercising our own local home rule and putting in place laws that people who live here have said are important to them. And I know that this is important to a lot of folks who live in the District of Columbia. And it's been important for a very long time, but as recent as my introduction of this bill, I've seen an outpouring of support from residents across the District of Columbia, in every single one of the 8 wards that we have, people have reached out and said, thank you, Councilmember McDuffie, for introducing this. It is well past time, and we have to move this forward. We talked about it for far too long. You know, Nkechi's been around long enough, as you mentioned, to have seen some steps in the right direction. But it is time that we take that final step to really, you know, put this task force in place, get those recommendations, and then to fund it in the same way that we funded the public health approach to violence prevention and intervention. We funded, you know, juvenile justice reform. We funded, you know, these controversial issues like, you know, ban the box for employment, ban the box for housing. We put money behind, you know, these sorts of things here in the District of Columbia. And I've been proud to champion a lot of these things myself.
Nkechi, talk to me a little bit about, from your perspective, and this goes back to what I was saying before, has this moved beyond proposals, resolutions, you know, to something tangible for Black people in this country, anywhere, town, city, state, anywhere?
Well, you know, things have got to start somewhere. I mean, like I said, this is an issue that's not a new issue. It's been going on for a long time, but it's only been very recently that the issue of reparations and reparatory justice has reached the quote-unquote mainstream, where you have 2020 candidates vying for the Democratic nomination are talking about if the bill, the federal bill, is passed, that they would sign it if they, you know, became president. I mean, we've never had anything the likes of this before. The unrest, all of the things that's going on in the streets, I think that was a big impetus and momentum towards what we're seeing today, where we're seeing jurisdictions across the country looking in their own backyards, opening up their own caskets and trying to seek some form of remedy. We have Elaine, Arkansas. I mean, many of us don't even know the atrocities that have been going on. They're looking at the situation where hundreds upon hundreds of Black folk who were just trying to mobilize during sharecropping for the basic rights. Tulsa, Oklahoma. I mean, we have 2 major TV, you know, series using Tulsa, Oklahoma as a backdrop. This litigation currently going on in Tulsa where you have living descendants. We're not even talking about you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. There are people who were living at the time of the Tulsa massacre. They're looking at these issues as well. Again, I keep saying it's an issue whose time has come, but it's like things don't just, you know, people have to be prepared. You might be ready. I might be ready. Councilmember McDuffie might be ready, but everybody ain't there yet, okay?
Yes.
And that's why, you know, sometimes, and Lord have mercy, I'm not the one who wants to talk about taking baby steps. But that's why sometimes there's a process, okay? And it's going through the process, but the process needs to be, you know, gone faster, I guess you could say. But, you know, these are steps, and I'm literally thrilled. I really am, because we've never come this far before.
Well, you don't have to convince me why. When I look in the mirror every day, I know why.
Okay.
But again, my question is, where are we now? And more to the point, specifically as it relates to you, if I could say, a race woman in 2020. If you were on the task force, and I'll put my bid in to get you on it.
You would not be alone, Harold. You would not be alone.
Yeah, to have your, you know, the intellectual and historical depth that you obviously possess. We need a voice like yours and your twin or your triplets or your quadruplets on something on the task force. But just your thoughts, what would reparations look like if you had your druthers?
So my philosophy is that the harm and the injuries were multifaceted. Thus, the remedies must be multifaceted as well. There's some people who just talk about, oh, cut the check. Mm-hmm. I am not in favor of any sole remedy being money or cutting a check. Again, the harm in Councilmember Duffy laid out was in education. It was in health disparity. It was in the economic wealth gap. It was in the cultural deprivation. It's in the criminal punishment system and more. The trauma. You know, there's something in psychiatry called transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. They did studies of second and third generation Jewish survivors of the Holocaust, their children, their grandchildren, and they found that there were issues that were going on with them. And they did the studies, and they showed that trauma from the Holocaust was traveling through the genes. And I'm looking at that and reading that, I'm saying, okay, my goodness. Well, what about the trauma for the over 400 years traveling through the genes, through the generations? Why is it that so many of us are becoming victims to the criminal punishment system? Why is it that we're dying disproportionately from the coronavirus? You know, why is it, you know, the lead paint, you know, all of these issues combined, okay, is part of the harm. So the remedy, as in my humble opinion, must touch upon each of those different injury areas. And again, it's not just the money. It's not just the economic wealth gap. That's a huge part of it, but it's not just that. What was the harm where, you know, I'm growing up and not even learning things that I should learn? I'm talking about back when I was coming up. I mean, things have drastically changed, particularly in the District of Columbia with respect to our history and the like. But the trauma and the harm from that, there must be some type of remedy. But there are a lot of issues that the commission would have to deal with. Well, just who would receive it? I mean, let's look at who's the majority in the District of Columbia now. I mean, that's part of the harm. The gentrification is part of the harm. Black folk being herded almost wholesale out. Why? One reason, we were not owners. We were renters, okay? That was part of the harm, too. So there are multifaceted issues that the commission will have to confront. But the good thing about it is there's been so much scholarship on these issues. So many people have looked at it now. It's not going to be hard to pull things together and to bring some brilliant minds together and come up with some remedies, some proposals for remedies.
Maybe not, but council member, who needs to be convinced?
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised. There's still some folks out there who need some convincing. Who think
I may that, not be surprised.
But black people, you know, some people think that black people simply need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. You and I and Akichi know that that's not the case. And I think most people out there know that it's not the case. I mean, there are numerous studies out there that have linked racism to worse health outcomes. The fact that, you know, racism, segregation have really, you know, served to exacerbate the health divide that exists between, you know, blacks and whites, resulting in communities of color in a district bearing the disproportionate burden of illness and mortality. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic is really just the latest example of where, you know, black people are disproportionately harmed and have disproportionately worse health outcomes. And so I think, you know, it's one reason why I introduced that bill, but also another reason why I introduced a sensitive council resolution last week as well to declare racism as a public health crisis in the District of Columbia. And so, you know, we want to address this thing from every single angle and really finally try to address some of these root causes that contribute to the existing disparities, right? I mean, yeah, slavery happened and was ended, you know, hundreds of years ago, but the vestiges of slavery, the disparities that exist in today can be linked back to, you know, some of the government-sanctioned efforts to discriminate against black people and to deny them and deny us those wealth-building opportunities, which is why, you know, we continue to lag behind in every indicator of success in the District of Columbia, be it education, be it employment, be it health, be it criminal justice, whatever the indicator. And again, that didn't happen, you know, just by chance.
Yeah. Walk me through the bureaucracy or the process. Okay, you introduced it last week, and this is just the first process where we're talking about the task force. You know, for those who don't have their ears to the ground when it comes to the DC Council, process. What is next after your introduction? Take us through that.
Sure. And I'm going to try to keep it as succinct as possible so as not to put your listeners to sleep. But
they need to know. I mean, this is important. They need to know. So go ahead.
They absolutely need to know. And I'll just say that in jest. But you know, I made the introduction. The chairman of the council makes a referral to a committee. This is likely to be referred to the Committee on Health, which is chaired by Ward 7 council member, former Mayor Vincent Gray. It's my hope that we'll have a hearing on this bill. We'll ask experts like Nikichi and others to come down and testify. We'll ask lay people, you know, ordinary District of Columbia residents and non-residents who have an opinion one way or another, support or opposition, to come down and testify. Not come down. These our hearings are virtual, but we'll have, you know, a hearing. And if you know, the people on the Health Committee decide to move it forward, then we'd have a vote in committee and then two votes before the full council. And then it would have to, if it passed the full council after two votes, go to the mayor for her signature and then over to Congress for passive review. And so that's essentially the process. We are at the end, the last quarter essentially of the year. And so, you know, as quickly as we can get through some of these things, the better off I think we'll be in moving this conversation forward and hopefully get to some substantive steps to finally ensure that, you know, folks who are still, you know, living with the challenges from their ancestors, forced slavery and the deprivation of their compensation for the labor that they provided in building our city and our country, perhaps I might finally be compensated for their ancestors' labor and contributions that ultimately built wealth for generations of white people.
You said the health committee, that's the D.C. Council's Committee on Health, correct?
It is the D.C. Council's Committee on Health, it is.
Why the D.C. Council Committee on Health?
Well, I think part of this, what determines on what the issues are at play. I'm sorry, I actually just conflated two bills. And so I mentioned the bill on reparations, but I also mentioned my sense of the council resolution to declare racism a public health crisis. And so that would be the bill that likely referred to the health committee. The reparations task force, a number of things that are in there deal with insurance and other forms of compensation. So it's my hope that actually will be referred to the Committee on Business and Economic Development.
Aha! That's what I was wondering.
I would imagine there's going to be a link to the committee on the whole because of the comprehensive nature of the bill. And it might be co-referred to the committee of the whole, which is chaired by the chairman of the council.
That's what I was wondering. Because I was thinking that while I can see perhaps that this could very well be in some ways an issue on to be addressed via health disparities, again, the floor, just the bottom layer,
ultimately
economic development.
Issue.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
This
Absolutely.
Is one of the issues that they're looking at on the federal level as well. It's currently in Committee on Judiciary, but once that goes to the floor, there's going to be issues of germaneness. Is it going to be, one of the other committees? Because the harm, like I said, covers all these major areas and categories. So that's something they're going to be grappling with on the federal level as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think there are so many moving pieces, to that. As I said, all kinds of disparities, whether it's health disparities, economic disparities, housing disparities, all of these many issues that even in the previously named Chocolate City, we may be Cafe Olé now, but there are still a lot of black people in this city that can benefit from not just the end result if you are successful, but the process. If nothing else, one more opportunity to be educational, to edify the not just the black community, but all of DC as this conversation continues to move forward.
Absolutely, Harold. Absolutely. And let's acknowledge that there are a number of colleges and universities, including prominent universities like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, locally Georgetown University, that are investigating their ties to the slave trade and really debating how to atone. As has been previously mentioned, you know, Asheville, North Carolina, Evanston, Illinois, California, a number of jurisdictions are taking up this issue, and I think that we should definitely tackle this issue right here in the District of Columbia, in the nation's capital, where clearly slavery took place, and there were reparations, essentially restitution, provided not to the victims, to the slaves, but to the slave owners once the Emancipation Act of the District of Columbia was passed in 1862.
Yeah, I'll let you have the final word, Nikichi.
Well, I would just say that I, again, am thrilled that my quest, which really began nearly, believe it or not, 50 years ago, to have reparations seen as a legitimate concept for African Americans is becoming a reality. And I really applaud Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie for making this, taking these steps to make this a reality right here in my home city. I'm a native Washingtonian and proud to be. And thank you, Daily Drum, for always, you know, making it real.
Well, we appreciate it. Don't go anywhere, Nikichi, because as I said, we're going to be talking to you in about 17 minutes on HUR at Home about your new book, but also about Race Matters in 2020. So we will be talking to you at HUR at Home in just a few minutes. Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And I'm looking forward to watching this bill move forward. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Harold, for having me. This is an extraordinarily important issue, and I appreciate you taking up the time.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, October 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.